This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Joel, you've been in this line, property investment, for almost a decade now, but this is not what you set off to do. Tell us what got you started.
Yeah, that's right. Now, I think I probably started, in retrospect, I recognise that I started because I was asking the question, how do we actually get what we want in life out of our goals and our dreams? And so I actually... my dreams when I was growing up was to go into architecture and have a beautiful house, you know, like super modern glass, square rooms, looking over amazing views. And it was pretty quickly apparent to me that that's not a very easy thing to get. So
architecture or those kinds of houses?
So those kinds of houses. Right. I think the architecture might have been realistic, but no, it was more those kinds of houses. I realized, you know, if they've got £1 million price tag, that's a difficult thing to achieve. And so I had this question of how do people ever achieve that? And then in the meantime, life kind of continued and I joined the army. So joined the army when I was 19 after school. And that was really to scratch the kind of adventure itch in the 19 year old. And then what I realized though was that actually when you go away with the army, so I went to Iraq when I was 20, you go away for 6 months, you spend no money, and they give you a nice operational tour bonus at the end of it. And I realized that that was actually enough to invest in my first flat. So I bought my first flat and then did the same thing when I went away the next time and did it a couple more times and spoke to some of the experts who were able to help me in things like finance and how to use the finance in the property
right.
to grow the portfolio. And then over time, that grew into a really a profitable portfolio, which really enhanced my life.
Architecture to the British Army, how did that happen?
Yeah, I think it was two separate ambitions which I had. So one of which was the architecture and just finding buildings incredible and really appreciating what they do in society. And then the other completely different one was just adventure and wanting to be part of something meaningful.
Right. So you're the CEO of Reapfield International right now. How did the career in the army prepare you for something like this?
So with Reapfield International, I've always been adamant from the start that we're an advising firm.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we advise people first on how they can achieve their dreams through property. So my time in the army with the part of the army that I was in. My role was to help inform senior decision makers in the army.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would build their understanding and we would help them to make important decisions in war. And so really the process that we've brought into Reapfield International is the same thing. So it's taking all of the information available, processing that information, understanding the needs
right.
of the client, which in the army was a general or a commander, but now it's our customers, and then turning that into something which helps them to make their own decisions.
Property investment is something like a war, I suppose.
Yeah, sometimes it can be, I suppose.
Now, you've also started your own property investment company right after you finished your service. How did that come about?
So actually, that was... In many ways, that was a very simple decision for me because I'd already been investing in my own properties. And for me, it had worked well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believed in it. I was passionate about wealth creation through property. But I could see that everyone around me, basically I was the only one around me who was doing it. I was the only one who was doing it. And so the opportunity was there because soldiers, sailors, airmen, pilots... It's not that they didn't want to do it. It's not that they weren't able to do it because they're in the same financial position as me in their start point.
Right.
But it was just that they didn't understand it and they didn't have exposure to property investment. So, it was quite simple for me to make that jump and decide that, I'd scratched the itch with a venture in the army and now it's time to move on. And here's somewhere where I feel like I can really add value to those people who I knew in the army. And so I did that. Yeah, set up a company.
What was the background that you had, the sort of prior knowledge that you had before you started advising people on property investment?
So prior knowledge in terms of property?
Yeah.
So in terms of property, the prior knowledge came from my own experience of at that point about 6 years of investing.
Right.
But I had mentors around me and experts around me who would help me understand finance and understand key investment tips like recognizing and identifying the fundamentals in the market. So that's where it came from mostly.
You actually started this back in 2008, 2009. If I get my timeline correct, that's about the time that the world was just coming out of a recession that was fueled by the US subprime crisis. Could you take us through how this event affected your decision?
Yeah, so I think, if I'm totally honest, Keith, I think at that point in my life, I made the decision to invest because based on my own personal circumstances. So I invested because I had the money was available. Mm-hmm. For the first time in my life, the money was available. And I knew what my goals were. I knew that I wanted to build up to getting that beautiful house somewhere in the UK. So for me, I didn't really, if I'm honest, I didn't consider the global scenario when I first invested in my first property. It's only in retrospect that I look back and I recognize that all of the investors we work with now, all of the ones who've been very successful, do that as a deliberate strategy. So after a recession, in the UK, the recessions in the 80s and the 90s, those people who invested at that point are now the ones who have made their millions in property because they bought at a low price in a buyer's market. So I think that's...
And we see it as something of a cyclical event, the recession. Do you see one coming around right now? And is it something that we can all take advantage of?
Yeah, so I think property, you're right, property is definitely cyclical. In the UK, it's not as simple as saying that the UK itself has a property cycle, which you do hear sometimes. It's more that the small markets within the UK each are in their own cycles. So I think there's always a good opportunity. No matter what point we are, you know, no matter what day it is in the year, there'll be a good opportunity there to achieve what you want to achieve from property somewhere in the UK, or we obviously deal with Australia as well, so somewhere there.
So for someone that's starting out, what's a good rule of thumb that you would advise?
So I think the key is to always start with the end in mind. Like you hear it, I think probably people who listen to your show have heard it a lot, that you start with your goals. And that's 100% true. And I think there's, once you've done that, and there's processes which you can use, there's kind of systems and tools that you can use to really dig down into what your dreams were or what your dreams still are, mm-hmm. and work back from there to put in milestones and put in goals so that you've got a step-by-step to achieving it, and then just stick to it. And along the way, check the fundamentals. I think the key fundamentals in the market is, it's probably the most important thing specifically within the property market, is that you need to have confidence and understand the market you're investing into and why it's going to be a good market, why it's going to grow. So is there going to be strategic government investment there? Is there going to be a new university? Is there a shortage in some way of housing there? And really understand your fundamentals before you go in.
In a little while, we'll find out the ins and outs of investing in Britain's real estate market as our conversation with REAPfield International's Joel Waller continues. BFM 89.9. We're back on BFM 89.9's The Property Show. We are talking to REAPfield International's Joel Waller, where we learn about what investing in the UK's property market is like. So Joel, REAPfield International specializes in properties in global cities, but we'll talk about the UK for now. What is the overall selling point?
For the UK, the overall selling point compared to other markets that we operate in is the openness of the market. So Malaysians, for example, can buy exactly the same properties that I can buy as a UK citizen. There's no restrictions at all. As well as that, there's a lot of Malaysians will enjoy favorable tax considerations. So for example, a Malaysian will often be able to get the same quite generous personal tax allowance, mm-hmm. as a UK citizen will. And that's because of the tax treaty between the two countries. So I think between there being no restrictions on what you can purchase and the favorable tax system, and then of course finance as well. So in the UK at the moment, you can get a mortgage for below 2%. And many mortgage companies in the UK will happily lend to Malaysians. So it's a very accessible market.
As a property investment consultant, what would you advise potential property investors to do before coming? What sort of homework would you recommend they do before coming to look for you for your advice?
So I think you don't have to do much before coming to us. We always recommend, as soon as we get a phone call or an email or a message on Facebook or whatever, we will always recommend that they come and talk to us very quickly, because the sooner that you bring us into the process, we can equip you with our expertise and the knowledge of the markets so you can have that informing your decision from the start point. So I'd say that's important, but there's definitely a lot that you can do to prepare yourselves at home, and especially for couples and families. Mm-hmm. So if you're not investing on your own, the decision making can be relatively simple, because there's one decision maker. If there's two of you in the decision making process, I would definitely recommend sitting down and just running through what your goals are and your dreams for your life, essentially. Right. But the important period of time is going to be the next 10 years, 20 years. What are the things that you want to achieve? And how do you want to use property to do that? And that's when you'll probably need to bring in, or you'd be advised to bring in, a professional who can really talk into that.
Just for some comparison and a bit of a perspective, how are property ownership laws different in the UK, for foreigners and for locals?
The property ownership laws are almost exactly the same. There's only one, there's really, if you're investing as an individual buyer, you can buy the same property as anyone else, and there's no restriction on you at all.
Right.
If you invest through a company vehicle, which some people will choose to do, there are some restrictions, but I definitely recommend talking to a fully qualified tax advisor to dig into that more deeply. But you can end up paying a tax called the annual tax on enveloped dwellings, which is an annual tax on overseas held companies.
Right. Now, of late, we've seen the pound really weaken, and thanks to Brexit, but the ringgit is even worse off. Is it still a good time for Malaysians to invest in property in the UK?
Yes, I think all of our investors who we work with have already invested in Malaysia. And a lot of times, the reason why they're now considering the international market is to diversify their portfolios. So you're right, the UK pound mm-hmm. has weakened. But fundamentally, for Malaysians, they're now, those who are buying with their ringgits held here, they're 15% better off than they were 2 years ago. So in other words, the ringgit is now 15%, is worth 15% more than it was 2 years ago against the pound.
That's the net effect anyway.
Yeah.
When it came to the announcement of of Brexit, how did that affect the UK property market? The immediate reaction?
So the immediate reaction was twofold. So the domestic market slowed mm-hmm. immediately and is still slow as a result. So in other words, UK citizens buying their own properties, that market has softened a lot, slowed down a lot. But at the same time, the immediate effect was international investors poured into the UK.
Right.
So it's a very interesting dynamic where in the UK, those who are at the coalface, as it were, and they're looking at this situation, and they've got all the media reporting around them,
right.
Everybody stopped. Everyone took a moment and they stopped. And when they did that, international investors could see the potential, and many, many more deals were closed in the following months after Brexit than were closed historically for that time of year. So international market really picked up, and the domestic market is still soft. So there's still good opportunity there.
But the full effects of the European Union pullout has yet to be felt. How do you see this playing into the decision to invest in the UK property market going forward?
So I think take it back to goals again for anybody who's listening who maybe is considering investing in the UK, and everybody who is will be aware and probably concerned about Brexit. It's got to be about your goals. This process for you has to be grounded in your personal situation, your objectives, and from there you can make a more informed decision. But I think my own personal view on Brexit is that the UK economy is based on so many deep-rooted industries.
Right.
And you can't lift up and move deep-rooted industries. So I'm talking about research and development, is a good example. So right. that research and development in the UK is world leading in a number of different areas, and it's because of the relationships with universities and with business and with the international businesses. And there's no way that that will ever be moved across the whole of the UK, as one example. So the fundamentals are still there in the UK, and I think now is definitely more of an opportunity.
Right.
But it has to be pinned onto individuals' goals.
You did mention earlier about it was good advice that one should always monitor one's investments, and Malaysians tend to like to do that. But if we were to buy a property in the UK, it would make monitoring that piece of property, its subsequent rentals and all, a little bit tricky. How would you suggest that be done?
So we always recommend that overseas investors use a letting agent for a few reasons. It minimizes the stress of the investment. You normally find that you get less void periods, so less mm-hmm. empty periods in the properties which you buy, if you're assuming that you're renting them out, because the tenant will be enjoying a better quality of service. They're probably going to stay longer. And if they don't stay longer, you've immediately got a letting agent who's on your side, who has somebody lined up to take over. So we'd always recommend that. And certainly what we do is an end-to-end service. So every element of the transaction process, we will walk with you step by step. So from legals, the tax considerations, any immigration considerations, and of course the letting as well.
And the maintenance of the unit?
So the maintenance of the unit, in the UK, the way it's done is, and this is different to how it's normally done in Malaysia.
Yeah.
In the UK, when you appoint a letting agent, you'll pay them a monthly fee of normally between 7 and 10%, and they will take charge of all maintenance requirements. So if the tenant has a problem with anything, if they have a leaky tap, if the boiler breaks, anything like that, they don't call you, they call the letting agent, and then the letting agent uses their network of handymen and fixers to repair the problem.
Finally, for many Malaysians, a consideration for buying property overseas, especially in the UK, is to have a place to stay for their children while they are studying. How do you see this compared to renting a place?
So this is a case in point, and it's a very common situation or common example of a client who comes to us, where they come to us and they've considered international investment precisely because their child is about to start university. But often there's two, not necessarily conflicting, but there's two separate considerations in their goals. So when we go back to their goals again, we recognize that there's one goal is for, and probably the most important goal, is that their son or daughter is in the best study environment that they can be in, so that they perform the best and they get the best results. So that's number one.
Right.
Number two is, for some reason, the client who's come to us, they've decided that there's an option here to invest themselves and buy the property. Rather, normally it's because they don't want it to be throwing money away at rent. Mm-hmm. But that's a separate consideration, because normally the reason they choose to do it is for financial reasons. So again, going back to goals, consider those two things as separate things. So if you want your child to do best at university, how's that going to be achieved? They probably need to be in a secure space. It need to be somewhere where they're safe, where they're located close to the universities, which they're going to be working at. They've got the facilities that they need around them and the environment around them, which is going to give them an ace result at the end of their 3 or 4 years at university.
Hopefully.
But then separate that. And we encourage our clients to separate that from the separate decision, which is the investment decision. It can be that those two go hand in hand. So it can be that it makes sense to buy the property which your son or daughter lives in for investment reasons. But more often than not, what we find is that it's better to invest your money in the place in the UK which is going to bring you the highest returns or the greatest capital growth over a period of time, and then use the money which comes from that to finance the rent for your child to be in the place that they want to be in, that they most enjoy being in. And what this also does, and this is a common oversight which some of our clients, the feedback we get from them, is you can end up buying a property for your child with the intention that they look after it, And that can be a really difficult thing and quite a lot of pressure to put onto a child once they're at university as well and they're taking in another culture. So it's not necessarily, it can be a false economy to think that you can save money on a letting agent fee, for example, by having your son or daughter manage the property for you, because that can easily conflict with your main reason for them being there.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.